This week on RSPNB Update, the beta test for the fractured staff of Armadale and Anime Dead arrives. Are rumors of their nerf over-exaggerated? We have our reaction, community data, and wacky polls. Then we delve into 2023 range switchscape and a short-lived community survey. This is RSPNB Update, episode 933, recorded Thursday, May 4th, 2023, The Fractured Poll. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. And contrary to what we were all expecting, the sky is not falling today after the Fractured Staff and Anime Dead beta has hit. We're going to have full coverage of that in just a couple minutes. But Tanis, you're here as you are each and every week.
Thank you, Shane. Yep, glad to be here on this week that I can honestly feel like a noob again. Because I don't know. I don't know how this works.
Yeah, yeah.
Glad David's with us.
Yeah, David is here, our resident PBM expert. No stranger to feats going back to AOD, Virago, Solak, and whatnot. You've been around the block so many times, and you've actually got your newest thing that you're doing with AOD that you're going to tell us in just a bit. But welcome back to the show.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to be back.
Yeah, I'm just gonna tease that feat a bit, the AOD feat that we're gonna be talking.
I'm not sure it's a feat. I haven't done any high level PVM in quite a while, and some friends invited me to AOD and showed me what the meta is for chins now, and it's been pretty fun to do some PVM again after a very long break.
Yeah, and it kicks Switchscape into the highest of gears, doesn't it?
Yeah. It basically just takes advantage of damage of adrenaline boosting ultimates by bringing all three combat styles to AOD, which is pretty fun.
Yeah, which you would not normally think would be possible, but lo and behold, it is today in RS3. And if you're joining us for the first time or you want to follow along, you can find the full show notes at update.show. We also have our Discord at rsbnb.com/Discord and the French chat is Bits Bytes as well. And you can find me at Shane12088 in game. Tanis is at Tanis79. And David is currently on his Iron Man at Ikalgo. So, Fractured Staff and Anime Dead Beta dropped today. We didn't know if we were going to have too much time to tinker around with it between when it dropped and showtime. But Tanis, you did get to go muck around with some of the stuff related to Anime Dead, and now you normally interact with Slayer, which is, I think, good. It's good to have coverage from the entire spectrum, from Slayer all the way up to high-level PVM. And David, you and I have been toiling through numbers that have been posted and just looking at, you know, the way the staff is interacting on the world right now. And I think on both fronts, it's safe to say that the sky is not falling.
I don't think so.
Yeah, because, I mean, the way I see it is that this thing was initially presented and everybody just ran to the conclusion that it was going to be a nerf. But I think the best way to describe it is a rebalancing of the Fractured Staff and Anime Dead to the point where some people might gain from this and some people are going to lose from this, I think. So, do you want to go through some of the changes that they made to this before we dive too much in, just in a very high level, just kind of saying this is the change they were going to make and this is what we got? Because I think that'd be good to kind of just put that back on the table from 3 or 4 weeks ago when that was first announced. So with this, the changes for the Fractured Staff focus around the special attack, in particular that the special attack no longer does auto attack damage, but instead there will be an extra hit that's passed through as an ability rather than the spell. And with this, there's no extra rune cost. The projectile is no longer sent from the player to the target, as expected from an auto attack, and instead, the green lightning effect from the special attack cast animation will play on the target when hit from a successful proc. And this special attack can no longer trigger off of itself, removing the recursive nature, And with this, it has a damage between 60 and 120% ability damage, making for 90% average damage per attack, which is interestingly right on par with the buffed rack ability from a couple weeks back. So what were your initial thoughts? Because I don't think we had you on the show in this first drop. What were your initial thoughts when you saw they were going to be changing Fractured Staff like this?
Well, I thought that it was way too powerful for a really long time in a way that was kind of game-breaking, definitely limited future development because it was so incredibly powerful that new content either had to be as good or better. And given that so much of this game is not really the type of thing where we're getting old content revamped to match with new updated damage increases, that it was kind of trivializing so much of the game and making it far too easy. And then the other thing is just that the rune cost was exceptionally high and really, you could just see in the price of soul runes, water runes, and blood runes, just the massive expense, which made it frustrating for Iron Man to use, but also expensive for players to use as well.
Yeah, and I think the people who runecraft and did the shop runs reaped a benefit from that in particular. And at the end of the day, it comes down to the fact that this thing came out in July of 21. So we're approaching 2 years since this has been in game. And obviously, for the first few days, we had the utterly broken variant where it would just continually crit off itself. But since then, the first week and a half after Care Pack's release, it's largely remained static. And I think what this comes down to as a whole is that, just to kind of make people feel more content about these changes, it would have been good to have had this done a lot sooner than they did. And as such, when we got this post a month ago or so, Tanis, you and I remember the reaction on that is that everybody assumed that this was going to be absolutely downright horrible and that it would actually ruin the Magic play type if you looked at some of the most sensationalist views, let's just say, at the time. So, but I don't think it's turned out to be that way. David, what have you seen in the community and around in relation to people who have been talking about this? Because I know the PBM community is one that has their opinions and will make those opinions known rather quickly. And it's good to take those opinions into account because otherwise you wind up in a situation where Jagex is in turn trying to lead that community, but if they don't have the potential buy-in, well, then you might end up with some unfortunate side effects along the way. Anyways, where are we at today after these changes have dropped on the Fractured Staff?
I would say that the buy-in among the very best PVMers is super good. People seem to really like it. They like that it's not going to cost an enormous amount of runes. I think that they like the fact that it's a little bit more predictable to do rotations. Yeah. There's positives and negatives to that. The recursive crits making it certainly allowed for a lot of experimentation and improvisation with rotations. So it was fun in that respect because based on your crit RNG, your approach to maximizing DPM would vary, and it's much more predictable now. And I think that's a pretty subjective preferred play style question. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer to that. I think though that other than some small things, which are rather significant nerfs, this is certainly not that large of a nerf.
No.
Things are fine. I think that I would say the one kind of strange thing is that it is more effort now to get the most out of your Fractured Staff than it was before. So if you were putting in a fairly high amount of effort but didn't want to put in a ton of effort, it was easier to do that in the past. I'm not sure if that is quite making sense to you, Shane.
Yeah. Basically, the way I would describe it is that the skill ceiling has increased on the Fractured Staff. and the skill floor has gone up.
Well, I would say the skill floor, it's definitely more difficult to, it's a much higher skill ceiling than it was before, because to get the most out of it requires four ticking, whereas previously four ticking was not used in an FSOA because of the way that auto attacks work with dual wield. And now that you're no longer restricted by that, four ticking is certainly optimal. So I would say that the skill difficulty has increased for maximizing it. But for people who are not worried about that, they shouldn't really experience that big of a change.
Yeah, and you know, that's been the general first day sentiment from community figures who have made their voices known on this, including Wazzy, the RS guy, Pup, is that, you know, this is still a weapon that you're going to do great things with. You're just going to do them in a slightly different way, and, you know, it's still very, very useful and a weapon that you're going to want.
Yeah, definitely. That's for sure the case. And I think that anyone who feels like they've received a huge hit to their damage, it's probably because they haven't updated their approach or rotations to reflect the changes and are expecting it to work exactly the same.
Bingo.
It doesn't work exactly the same. And the way it worked in the past was, in my opinion, not very good game design. And I think the game design now is much better.
Yeah. And what we end up in with a situation in general, and you can correct me if my assessment on this is wrong, is that the way this is built now is that for optimal magic coverage, what you're going to wind up doing is you're going to wind up running with a setup that focuses on your dual wield weapons, greater concentrated blast, using this in an EOF combined with four tick auto attacking, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you need to EOF it, because when you're four ticking, you're just using the staff as
right.
It.
So okay,
so I don't think it needs to be an EOF weapon, which I'm very glad.
Well,
for.
Yeah, which is true, because how many times have we heard the story that, oh, Jagex just made another EOF weapon? That's not good.
Yeah, it's really frustrating to me when the most optimal ways to use a new weapon is
to put it in the EOF.
I think that's poor game design.
Right,
and I'm glad that this does not do that.
Right, and that was the case with the Saren Godbow until last year when we got the arrow changes that came in. So, overall, I mean, This was thought to be a case where the sky might have been falling coming in, but if you update your rotations and you, in effect, know what you're doing with, dare I say it, the four-tick auto-attacking, you're likely going to get similar, if not better, results than before. And I take this quote from the RS guys feed. Previously, a max effort Sunshine Burst in the live game was 390k DPM. And then in the combat beta, using the same sort of setup, max effort, four tick auto attacking Sunshine, 410k under the current setup.
Mm-hmm. And maybe we could explain why four ticking is relevant again.
Yeah, go for it.
I'm not sure everyone knows.
Go for
it. Yeah, so the way that auto attacks work is that they're based on the base damage of your weapon. And so for dual wield, if you release an auto attack with a wand, it does 66% damage. But if you release an auto attack with your offhand, it's 33% damage. And so people didn't four tick with people weren't four ticking because there was just a lot of lost critical hit damage that came from the offhand being so much lower. And now four ticking is way better than it was. But the other kind of, I mean, this mostly seems true to me. I would say that the 390k DPM number is not, it's probably a good average or a good median. The thing about the old spec is that if you got really incredible recursive crit RNG, that number can be pushed way, way higher, or it can be lower if you did not get good critical hit RNG on your recursive hit. So it's much more consistent than it used to be, I would say. So the the ceiling is definitely, I think, lower than the live game version, but it is far more consistent than it was.
And if we go back to the complaints that they had internally about the fractured staff, that's exactly what they wanted to do. They wanted to, in effect, bring the top level down just a bit, but also just make things more consistent.
Yeah. And if you look at the other numbers he has dual build camp, 333K in the live game, 360K in the beta, and then staff, 320K in the live game, 310K in the beta. So this is one thing that perhaps it is true, which is that if you didn't want to switch to dual wield, if you wanted to just bring your fractured staff and nothing else, it's certainly a little bit less damage than before.
Right.
And the other thing is that rotations are a little bit more difficult because basically with good critical hit RNG, all you had to do to get extremely high amounts of damage was to just spam Armadillo Battle Staff specs over and over and over. And that's been kind of removed, which I like. Again, I didn't think it was that fun for the meta to just be spam Armadillo Battle Staff and hope for the best. I think it's kind of nice that you can be more consistent and that things are more predictable.
Yeah, that and you know, that's actually welcome news, I think, because I am a strong proponent in games in that if you're gonna, you know, do a change that is effectively going to could be accomplished with a nerf, I am generally in the camp of bringing other content up to balance things out rather than hitting other things with the hammer. And you know, there's people who are going to disagree with that. But I think that this is walking that line of, you know, let's not tune things up too high, but also at the same time, let's also just not, you know, hit this thing with the ban hammer over its head and exile it to Erebus to never be seen again, right? So.
Yeah.
I think we're in a good place on this.
Yeah, and I would say the one thing that I don't love about this is the removal of Magic's AoE potential at the staff. Right. So you would use Blood Barrage for your special attack. That would give you tons of Blood Barrage hits, which are of course AoE. It's really, really nice. It's something like Angel of Death with the minions. It's really good for when you group up Scopulous at Virago, you can hit them all. Really anything that where you would benefit from AoE is hurt pretty substantially by this change. I think that a really easy fix would just be to let the Green Lightning mechanic do AoE damage. That AoE damage could be nerfed. Like, it doesn't need to be 90% average ability damage. It could be less for targets that are not the main target that you're facing. So you know, if you're using an Angel of Death, for example, then it would be the regular amount of damage for the boss, and then the four minions would take reduced damage. I think that would be a good change.
Yeah, and then it doesn't also wouldn't have to, you know, pass on the properties of the spell in the case of, like you were mentioning with Blood Barrage, because I'd imagine that was also a fairly chonky healing mechanic as well. That is now gone.
Yeah, it provided a huge amount of healing. It was really incredible, especially if you were getting all those recursive hits, all those Blood Barrage hits would heal you a ton. And I think that's another one where you could reasonably disagree about whether it's good or bad, but I mostly think that it's fine, because if you're doing stuff correctly, very few bosses require any sort of food. Or I shouldn't say correctly, but if you're using optimal rotations, you shouldn't really need food for almost any boss in the game.
Right. Okay. And I feel like that covers everything I wanted to talk about, where we landed on this, what the community's feedback was, and where we're at on this. I think overall they hit the spot, and I would be okay with this going into game. Would you?
Yeah, I think so. It'd be nice if they at least considered giving it some AoE damage. And the other kind of broader thing here is that it's been quite a while since the release of the newest version of the spec, because remember, the spec was changed substantially yeah. from on release yeah. because on release it was doing about 2 million damage per minute, which apparently is too much. Who knows why? but we've been in a place where 4-ticking was either not beneficial or so
right,
minor
we need to talk about
that it basically yeah. didn't make a difference.
Yeah.
And now,
now it's required for this.
As is today. Yeah, I mean, it's not, again, like, people should be able to play the game however they want. For group bossing, it's not that hard, really, at least in my experience, to find teams who are relatively casual. But in order to get the most out of PVM, we're once again back in a spot where 4-ticking is certainly a requirement to do the most possible damage. Whereas before, it was, you know, just barely better to use it. And oftentimes it wasn't better to use it. And now it's a pretty huge DPS increase to use 4-tick auto attacking. Although you'll still get great results just camping dual wheel.
Well, as we see, and I mean, I'm not sure how I feel about that because there have been efforts in the past to try and, you know, mitigate 4-tick auto-attacking and whatnot. In particular, I'm looking at the recent shared cooldown between Concentrated Blast and Sonic Wave variants. And now this kind of enshrines 4-tick auto-attacking again. So, I don't know. That's a little bit odd to me.
Full-throated endorsement? What are you talking about?
Yeah, Tannis?
Yeah, I don't...
Or David? I don't know.
I don't mind 4-ticking too much, you know, separate conversation, but the game should obviously have an in-game macro system that makes 4-ticking easy, or it should get rid of 4-ticking.
You know, I debated
solutions.
I debated if we were going to go there on this episode, because I feel like that's something that could warrant its own discussion.
Yeah, I mean, if they release, all they have to do is release, is make macroing okay, and then 4-ticking is way more accessible and easy to use, but in my experience, 4-ticking has never really been that difficult for me. I just, you know, went to my house back when house dummies were how you practice PVM before the Lumbridge dummies were how you practice, yeah. and practiced it for a while. And with a gaming mouse, it's not nearly as hard as people think. But you know, not everyone wants to put in that level of effort. And again, I mean, the staff is Magic is going to be extremely strong even if you don't 4-tick. There's no boss in the game you need to 4-tick at in order to successfully do it.
So if you wanted to,
your results will not be as good.
Yeah. So if you wanted to, with this new fractured staff, if you wanted to, you know, just camp dual wield and whatnot, would you EOF the fractured staff, or would you just swap to it for its spec?
I would just swap to it for its spec. I mean, I wouldn't want to EOF something that expensive.
Okay.
Given
okay.
Justice. Yeah, because you know, if you're doing pretty high level PVM, you probably want a couple of different EOFs anyway. So it's right. not even saving you a switch to.
Is the Armadale Battle Staff still in vogue?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely are still going to see the Armadale Battle Staff being used. It's just less central because the previous best damage was you would get enough recursive autos along with your 5 Armadale Battle spec, you know, along with the 5 hits that the ABS gave you, that you could just use ABS over and over and over again.
Right.
And that's of course an ABS that's been EOF'd, but you know, it's less central than before, but the optimal rotations will for sure include it still. It's not going anywhere. The way it interacts with the special attack is just way too strong because it gives you 5 chances to crit each time you use the special attack, which is huge.
All right. So before we go on to Animate Dead, I want to ask you guys a question. Do you guys think they're going to pop this into game as it is?
No, because the polls are so incredibly negative and Reddit is so incredibly negative. And I think
is Reddit incredibly
very
negative? I felt like Reddit was kind of ho-hum in my reading.
Some of it's negative, some of it's positive. I think a lot of it is neutral. I think you're right. But the poll is really lopsided.
Yeah, let's talk about that right now, because this is quite honestly bullshit, and I don't use that word lightly on this show.
Bullshit.
What is your opinion of the proposed fractured staff of Armadale changes? 24% ready for launch. 1% not ready. Fractured Staff of Armadil is too powerful. 74% not ready. The Fractured Staff of Armadil is no longer powerful enough. What?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the questioning is also weird, to be fair. I mean, I think that, yeah, it's odd because powerful, not powerful isn't exactly right. Like, it's certainly powerful enough to come as is because it's still incredibly strong. But is this exactly what I want? I guess the answer to that is no. I think I already mentioned what I would hope for, which is just some return to the AoE potential of the staff.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say the problem is it's not powerful enough. It's certainly very, very strong. I mean, there's a great GOAT video on YouTube that was posted of him doing solo hard mode Virago with the staff, and he had no issues with it whatsoever.
Right. And just to be clear, before anybody asks, is watching the video version of this, I took the option of skip question for both of these, because when I had logged into the beta world, I had not actually personally done any testing on this yet. So I just wanted to make that clear that I did not vote in this poll one way or another. And that's another thing that is a bit of an odd question, is that, you know, you can log into the beta and vote however you please.
Can't blame Shane if he didn't vote.
Exactly. And my hope is that behind the scenes they'll be able to kind of look at the people who voted in the poll here and tie that to people who actually, you know, interacted with the content, and, you know, hopefully those people's votes will have more of an impact than the people who didn't on this. Because, you know, this is just absolutely ludicrous with everything that we've gone over with the numbers, with the community reaction, with how this compares to other abilities in the Magic Ability Book. It makes no sense to see these numbers here as is right now.
Yeah. I think that if people are voting without having actually tested the Fractured Staff at all, that seems a little bit disingenuous to me.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that's weird. You have to have Animate Dead and Fractured Staff to test it.
Yeah, but anybody can log into the beta world and vote.
Yeah,
I
mean, in previous betas, they've had NPCs where you could just get whatever equipment you want, right?
Yeah, and I feel like that's a problem in itself, because we kind of went that way for EOC, and look what happened with that, right?
Voter fraud. I want paper ballots.
Me too. I love paper ballots. You want paper ballots? Come to Canada. We do it that way here.
Yes.
100%.
Paper.
But anyways, I'm of two minds on this. One, I can definitely see that it would be good to, you know, get a wider spectrum of tests to see, you know, what people are saying on this. But at the same time, people need to have interacted with the content in order to be able to vote. So whether that means that you've been a Fractured Staff owner since the week it came out, or you just picked one up this week, you should be able to have an opinion on that. But at the same time, I don't know that combat betas before have gone well where they've put all the equipment out. Because isn't that what happened with weapon diversity, if I remember correctly?
Yeah. Why was it bad that they put all the weapons out?
Because people were out of their breath and trying things that they didn't normally interact with. And as a result, the feedback wasn't nearly as tailored as it could have been.
I see. I okay, that makes sense. So basically, someone who has never done any sort of high level PVM before hears about how unbelievably powerful Fractured Staff is, tries to use it as a boss, has no idea how to do that boss, and just dies over and over, and then says, "Well, this is obviously too weak because I'm still dying."
Yeah, but like,
whatever it is.
Like I don't even know if that's happening here, because to be fair, these numbers haven't budged much in the last, you know, 6 hours since I first opened this up.
But what's weird is, like David said, the real big guys
are okay with it.
That's the puzzling part to me, right? Like for someone like me, you don't notice.
We're gonna go there next with Anime Dead.
Right, but it's such a small fraction that applies to such a small slice of that fraction to begin with that, I don't know. I kind of feel like it's a skill issue. Like, I don't mind that David should get more out of it than I would, right? Like,
yeah, and then that comes the question of where Fortick auto-attacking lands on all this, right? And
I mean, we know where it lands. It's not a bug. It's a feature.
If you really wanted to go down that path and make it a feature, you know, just add a secondary weapon slot, like ESO has, for example, and let you automatically have two action bars that you can swap back between freely with that. I mean, that's how ESO does its combat system, and
yeah.
I don't know if that's something RS would want to legitimize by, you know, having a button where you can swap between, you know, primary weapons, which would be your wands, and then your backhand weapon, which could be your fractured staff.
I was going to say, like, that, I mean, that makes two camps happy. I mean, which, David's going to have to chime in on this, but isn't also that an endorsement and also, like, just further down the road of Switchscape, which I don't know, maybe that's a good thing, maybe it's bad. I have no idea.
Morgan,
but it would be touching that too, though, right? Like, if you could just swap your weapon like that, that's like, you know, that's endorsing Switchscape too.
Yeah, and then, you know, we can also have like David was alluding to, that wider discussion on macros and whatnot, because, you know, we all have I have a gaming mouse. I don't know how many other people do, but they have software for that built in. And the last official line of conversation from Jagex on those gaming keyboard and mouse macros is that no, you shouldn't use them. But at the same time, you know, you look at other games like WoW and whatnot, they're allowed to use them. Maybe that's a conversation we need to have here too, as well, if this is what's going to, you know, become part of the combat system in RS.
All I'm saying is, if macros are endorsed by Jagex, then I will never entertain another word about pay to play, XP too much, nothing, because that's an endorsement of botany, in my opinion. On a skilling side, maybe not on a PVM side, but
yeah,
macro's a macro.
I think we do need to have this discussion in the future right now. And you know, we'll just touch briefly on it right now, but in the high level PVM community, David, people you hang out with, your friends and whatnot, do they want macros? How do they feel about that?
Oh, I think most people definitely want macros to be enabled, or they want something to be done about Switchscape. You know, one of the two. I think just at a certain point, the regularity to which updates are released, where there is a pretty immense difference between using a lot of switches and not, I think that something has to be done at some point either way.
All right, fair.
Either like this is going to be the way that it's done, and they're gonna like be going in that direction, or
yeah,
you know,
yeah, either the future is more inputs, or the future is fewer inputs. But if it's more inputs, the way that most other games have handled that is by allowing for a macro system.
And with RS's history of that on the skilling side, you start to get into that. Into that murky territory. So we'll leave that for now, and maybe come back to that in the future. Before we move on, I want to thank our wonderful Patreon supporters this week. This week, I'd like to thank Alaska, Alfie S, Amos Reed, Anatoly D, Andrew C, Arvids L, Beekeeper Steve, Big Huge Rat, Bryflex, Chunk the Monk, Cycle RS, Drama Free, Duramax, Free Milk, G Hammy, Guy Lafleur, Jacob G, Jade Gizmo, Jason S, Jeebus, Jesse W, Jim M, Keski, Killer Snowball, Malinoric, Mohan V, Nate the Great, Nick G, Parnassius, Ricky A, Rippeth, RS Nerdherd, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Shirtpan, Stub Eve, Tanner JW, The Naked Captain, The Dabbing Goat, Tim, Tom V, Zant, and Zazakon. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly means the world to us, and Patreon allows us to do what we do here each and every week. All of our fun little specials that we do, we're just working on putting the finishing touches on the Evolution of Transportation, the monthly bit that you guys voted for. We'll be recording that and getting that out the door next week to you guys. We're going to be having a look at how transportation has gone from the inception of RS2 all the way to where we are today, and what that brings with it, problems, and what's good and what's bad about that. So a deep look at transportation around RuneScape. But that, plus 55 plus other monthly bonus shows you get access to, and an entire back catalog of monthly bits, as we call them. We've talked about Legacy Combat before. We've talked about our PVM boss tier list. We've talked about the skill tier list and so many other things on these monthly bits. All of that available for as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/RSBNB. But in addition to that, you are helping us fund the cost for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. We do have a mid-tier where for $3 a month, you'll get a special VIP rank on our Discord server and mentioned on the podcast at the start of the month, plus high-quality stereo versions of the show, in addition to everything else. And if you want to give the ultimate gift, you can subscribe for $5 a month, where you receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week. And with that, you'll also gain access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. So a big thank you, of course, goes to everybody out there who allows us to do what we do here at RSBNB Update. Some of the most fun that we have, some of the best learning experiences we have do come from our monthly bits, roundtables, and just in general interacting with our wonderful community. So big thank you goes out to everybody. If you'd like to join them, just head on over to patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everyone. Of course, Animate Dead was also touched. We got to talk about that as well. And just like with the Fractured Staff, we will summarize the initial set of changes that was on offer for that. So with Animate Dead, what was happening with this is that now it can't reduce damage by more than 60%. This was previously 75%. Damage reduction now uses 25% of your defense level rather than a third. And it now only works against core magic types of melee, magic, and range. So it won't work against your typeless damage types as well. And I'm going to go to you first, Tanis, on this one, because you did go do one of your Slayer tasks on this. And?
And ready? Felt the same to me. And I'm relatively new to using Animate Dead. Like, I've had it for a long time, ever since like right before Extinction. I wasn't doing any kind of combat, so I recently have been using it with the new undead task, the ghost, just to hang out longer. So I actually was using Crit Bloom and that, and for me, you know, I'm on that filthy casual side of combat where, like, you know, I don't have skill. I'm really doing what I'm doing is repetitive. It's kind of, you know, it's as good as it's going to get. And I did not notice a difference. Like, it's so small for me to perceive a difference.
All right. And then, David, on the PVM side, what does this going from 75 to 60% do? And I'd imagine the defense level one is going to be the least impactful of the three changes that were made, with the typeless change being the most impactful. Where do you think this lands based on, you know, just bosses that we have in game right now and whatnot? I know you were mentioning God Wars 2 AFK ability.
Yes, I think 75 to 60, very little difference. The thing that matters is the typeless damage removal. And there is basically two areas that that affects. The first is what I would call mid-level PVM that turns into AFK PVM. So Godrus Dungeon 2 is a really good example of this. Most notably Vindicta and Hellwear. For Hellwear, the mushroom damage is typeless, and for Vindicta, the flames. And in the live game, it's very easy to AFK those bosses with Animate Dead and, you know, Ganoderimic armor or better. It could be ports, could be Ganoderimic, doesn't really matter. It doesn't need to be Crypt Bloom. And it allowed you to survive very easily for the whole hour, assuming you had greater concentrated blast and tier 85 magic weapons and overloads, because the Animate Dead would reduce typeless damage taken by mushrooms and flames to something that was totally negligible. And now it's much harder to survive AFKing those bosses. So that's the first one. And I don't have a strong opinion about whether that's good or bad for the game. It's kind of nice, in my opinion, to be able to AFK those, because I just don't get that much out of doing them while paying attention, because they just require almost no effort other than stepping a few squares when you're getting hit by a thing. And now it requires you to step those squares, so you can't. You have to click every few mechanics now, instead of being able to click once every 5 minutes. So I don't know. What do you two think? Do you think bosses like Vindicta and Hellwear should stay totally AFK? Another good example is Hard Mode Godrus Dungeon 1. There are some typeless mechanics that will kill you in the beta that could not kill you in the live game, because Animate Dead reduced them to so little. So that's another one, is you'll probably no longer be able to AFK Godrus Dungeon 1 hard mode.
You know, I don't think this is going to be an issue for people learning Godrus Dungeon 2, because you're going to be trying to, you know, work within these mechanics and whatnot. And the reason I say that is that I believe the mechanics should be there. You shouldn't be able to use game tools like Animate Dead to sidestep these mechanics. So that's how I feel when it comes to God Wars 2.
And I can see where you're coming from, Shane, because there was a time when God Wars 2 was kind of where you were comfortable, and then you just jumped, you know, you went into that, I would say, high level, but not David level, you know.
Yeah.
Pretty, but up there. Whereas for me, I don't mean this as in like a, I don't mean this in the way that I normally mean accessibility, but I believe it makes the boss kind of accessible.
Okay.
For someone lower skill.
Right.
Like myself, who, you know, for whatever reason, I mean, I've always said moving to me feels like you're fighting in water in this game. So,
yes,
like, it's hard.
Absolutely.
And so I don't know.
And my bigger question on this to you, David, is that legacy mode in God Wars 2, does that change with this? Because I know
that's a good question. Because that was another AFK sort of thing, right? Yeah, I imagine Legacy Mode, God Wars. I mean, it will not be possible to AFK in Legacy Mode in God Wars 2, because you will have to move for things like mushrooms or flames.
Yeah.
So you can still do AFK. You can still do it. You know, you only need to click when those mechanics pop up and just move a couple squares. And other than that, Animate Dead will take care of you, and you can still do God Wars Dungeon 2 in Legacy. Legacy Slayer will still be very good. So things like Moss Golems and Nightmare Creatures, which are two really, really good tasks where they're very high XP, high money, and fully AFK. The new version of Animate Dead seems to be totally fine. You might need to bring 4 pieces of tank armor instead of 3, so you might get a few less kills an hour.
That's actually a question for you, Tannis. How many pieces of tank armor are you using? Are you using the full 5-piece Crypt Bloom set, or what are you using?
Well, no way, man. I gotta have my Silverhawk boots on all day, every day, getting the XP the right way.
Oh my god. Oh my. Are you being serious right now? Or are you pulling my leg?
I'm dead serious. I'm skilling even when I'm killing my brother.
I love Silverhawk boots.
Am I the only one who doesn't use them?
I mean, I'm at 142 million agility XP, and I've done zero laps past 99, man.
Man, Silverheart boots are like gators, and it's hard to hold these gators down.
Oh my god. Yeah,
they're, it is much more fun.
I forgot what the initial question was. Oh.
How many pieces of tank armor are wear?
Right.
It sounds like you're using four.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say a lot of tasks where you only needed three, now you probably want to bring four, but that's pretty minor of a difference. Same thing with like AF King, Ripper Demons, or Abyssal Lords. That stuff is totally.
Yeah, because those Abyssal Lords did hit pretty hard with that when that first launched.
Yeah, but you know, Anime Dead cleans it up. It's definitely less incredibly strong than it used to be, but it's still just very, very strong. So I think the first thing it does is subjective. Whether you think Godward's Engine 2 can be AFK or not AFK, I think it's up to personal opinion. I don't care that much about it. The second thing Typeless Damage does is there are a few mechanics with high-level PVM where there's a lot of Typeless Damage that Anime Dead helps a lot with. Yeah, so Zuck is one. Hard mode Zuck with the flames attack.
Yeah,
I don't think this is a big deal. Just play with game sounds on, move when you get the game sound for it, whatever.
Sound cues. What?
This. Yeah. There are a lot of bosses where playing with sound on makes the boss way easier because there will be sound or a voiceover that tells you to move when you're supposed to move.
And who would have thought?
There are a lot of bosses where you don't have to look at your screen to know when to move because it just tells you via sound.
Okay, you have my attention.
I play Solak with sound on. I play Zuck with sound on. There are a couple others, and then I don't have to pay attention to my screen. I could just kind of relax because the game will tell me out loud when I'm supposed to move.
There you go, Tanis. You can go kill Solak.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah, well, it's not too obviously. But yeah, so another good example of this would be Telos. Now remember, 4K Enrage at Telos was achieved long before any of this stuff came out, so you don't need any of it, but the so much power mechanic is typeless. Animate Dead allowed you to more easily survive that mechanic. The only reason you would be hit by that mechanic is if you've made a serious mistake, so you know it's good for learning that mechanic, I suppose, because if you make a mistake, you're not killed. But I don't know. What do you think about that one, Shane? I mean, you're supposed to disruption shield it.
I don't think that's a big deal because I think using disruption shield is fine on that. One thing I think that needs to have a further discussion on this regarding Animate Dead and Typeless and whatnot, and you know, I'm not the person to ask about this. Maybe you might have some ideas on it. Higher Enrage is a Zamorak.
Yeah, so I've never pushed Zamorak to super high Enrage. I've always stuck to, you know, around 250, 300, 350, right around there for doing my kills where bad luck mitigation is up. And I just use Tectonic. It's totally fine. But I can see for Phase 7 people being pretty nervous about the lack of Animate Dead. But I think Animate Dead, again, there pretty much covers you for mistakes. And then for really high Enrage, like the people who are doing 15,000 Enrage Zamorak, the damage is capped at 4,000 for pretty much everything. And it does so much damage at that level that mistakes will kill you even through Animate Dead, if that makes sense. So the way that people are doing, in case you're curious, I don't know if anyone is, but the way people are pushing Enrage to that level is with Intercept and Immortality. So some of the mechanics are designed to bypass prayers. So you can't just use defensives to get
through
everything. But they forgot about Immortality. So basically the boss was designed to make it impossible to push past 4,000 functionally, because your defenses would not work, except Immortality does. So Immortality rotating is
going to, and then you just intercept that onto whoever's running Immortality then.
Yeah, and so it definitely makes Zamorak harder. Like phase 7 Zamorak is harder, but also in the beta people have done 100 Enrage with tier 85
yep.
Psywear weapons
yep.
and Ganodermic, and have done it relatively easily. So I don't think it makes it inaccessible. I think it makes it harder, but it's, I know, again, all of these things are basically just things that keep you alive when you've made a significant mistake. So
yeah. And my biggest concern with Anime Dead going forward is that mechanics should not be designed in such a way where Anime Dead is the go-to for it, because I feel like a lot of that early Zamorak pushing was done with Crypt Bloom and Anime Dead.
Yeah.
So that's I think that just it's a tool to have in the shed for that, so to speak, but at the same time, is that something that we want to become a mainstay of PVM and RS is a wider question on that. And very much so, just like the other changes, my thought going into this one was that, you know, we heard more about the Fractured Staff than we did Anime Dead. So my initial reaction to this is that the Anime Dead changes would be the ones that would go over just fine, and the Fractured Staff we'd have more dialogue about. But it turns out that we're, you know, about equal on both, it would seem. And Anime Dead is kind of just slipping under the radar right now, and you know, there's not too
much. It's weird though, because it affects way more people.
It does. It does.
Way more people.
It does.
It's not as flashy, but it's a lot more impactful.
And I mean, obviously, this beta's been out less than a day now, and the important thing about this is that, you know, I haven't had a chance yet to, you know, go to a Slayer task with Anime Dead, which I probably should at this point to just go, you know, see what exactly the heck's happening with this in-game. Tanis's test is a good first test, but I think there just needs to be more on that. And I'm going to go to the Anime Dead poll on that. 35% say ready for launch, and 62% say it's not ready. Anime Dead is no longer powerful enough.
I didn't know. I don't know, man. It didn't seem that big of a change to me. But then again, I have no idea what kind of. I think it's magic damage. The stuff was. I was dealing with. I mean,
what were you fighting again?
I was just fighting those.
Risen Ghost or the Phantoms?
The Phantoms.
Okay, Armored Phantom. Yeah. Those are magic based, I believe.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. Yeah.
Dude, those things are strong. Are you AoEing them or fighting them one at a time?
Oh, one at a time.
Oh, okay, yeah, they're really, really strong when you AoE them. I really like Risen Ghosts with a cannon. It's super, super chill.
Oh, we had a fun discussion week about the cannons.
The cannon. Oh, really?
Not the cannon.
Well, you have to use a cannon. Otherwise, you're...
Tanis went into rat mode, and it came down to the fact that Tanis wants cannons exiled to the player-owned Slayer dungeon.
Yeah.
I don't. It's fine. Just hop. Like, I mean, on release, it's like, on release, new content is always overcrowded. But now, most of the time, you don't need to hop, and if you do, it's only two or three times. It's no big deal. But they keep designing Slayer tasks where the difference between a cannon and no cannon is like 500k XP an hour. So as long as they do that,
that's why it should be in the dungeon, right? Like, we're you know,
you're limited to five spawns. So then that seems bad too. I mean, the only thing that Canon does is make it so you don't have to run around tagging stuff.
Like, why can't it just be like? I mean, it can we make cannons like Canada? You can shoot them in your yard if you live in the country, not like America where. You shoot them anywhere, man. Drop down a cannon. Like, let's do it like Canada. Right,
oh
Shane?
My god, no!
Shoot in your backyard.
No. And with that, I think we're about done on Fractured Staff and Animate Dead. All right, we do have a few patch notes this week. I realize this has been a lot of talk about Fasoa and Animate Dead and all that other fun stuff. But a couple of patch notes this week just to move things along. Some changes to the unwelcome guest content. Demon flash mobs are no longer affected by the guardhouse's insta-kill buff. Yeah, you could wipe out that demon flash mob really quickly, apparently.
So fun. They should have just left that. Who does flash mobs anymore? that's hilarious.
I know. I just imagine seeing them and this just... Poof, God, disappear.
Just insta-killed.
But we take it one step further, because Linza, Akrise, and the Wildy Worm are also being affected by the guardhouse insta-kill buff.
Mm.
Not the rest of the Barrows brothers, just Linza and Akrise and somehow the Wildy Worm.
Nice.
I don't know where those ones came from compared to everything else, but that's something. And then general patch notes, players can now progress while Gothic sleeps when they have destroyed a specific item in the quest. The Hunter skill guide for Carrion, Draconic, and Godjadinkos now say preferred bait instead of required bait. And an accidental change that made lodestone icons on the action bar blurry has been corrected. So just a couple of little fixes here and there. And I wanted to mention the action bar one in particular, just in case you noticed that your action bar icons to lodestones had become blurry. That is why, and that's here is now fixed. So, all right, it's 2023, and there's this thing called Switchscape for ranged. Because, what would you say your main combat style is on your Iron Man, David?
Oh, definitely magic.
Okay, yeah, definitely okay. So, magic. So why are you? Why are you using ranged with 10 plus weapon swaps and armor swaps included in that and all three combat styles? Just why are you doing this on your AOD setup that you've been running recently?
Well, because AOD now is done in either 4-man or 5-man kills. No one really does 7 anymore. I suppose some people might, but there's no need to. And in the 5-man setup, you want to have 4 people with FSOA and 1 person who is bringing chins.
Okay.
Chins are used because you get so much DPS on the minions, so you can kill the minions really, really fast.
Mm, okay.
And so I don't have an FSOA, so my only option on the team of friends that I've been going with is to be the ranger. And in order to maximize damage, I've been bringing a scythe so that I can build for a meteor strike. So meteor strike gives you extra adrenaline with critical hits. Tsunami gives you extra adrenaline with critical hits. And so I'm bringing all three styles so that I can make sure to have either meteor strike or tsunami buff up before parts of the fight that require lots of burst damage. And it's pretty fun because with Tsunami up and Hydrix bolts, I don't have a Bow of the Last Gods or I'd be using that. Iron Man, by the way. But with Tsunami buff and Hydrix bolts, I could sometimes get 11 to 12 Dark Bow special attacks off in a single Death Swiftness. Which is pretty fun to see, because you just see 13,
and that's 35
14,
seconds, right? I assume you're running it extended.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so I get off an SGB spec, as well as between, on average, it's more like 7 to 9. I would say 7, 8, 9 Dark Bow specs is about average if you have a Tsunami buff up. And so at the beginning of the fight, everyone drops a dummy and uses natural instinct. And then the rotation at the start is you just natural instinct, put up a death swiftness, build to 100, use meteor strike on the dummy, and then the boss spawns. And for that first phase, it's really important for damage to be super high, so you can skip a bunch of mechanics. And if you don't skip those mechanics, it extends the fight a lot. So you could have your meteor strike buff up. And then when the boss gets phased to 1.8 million damage, the boss is attackable, but you can't damage it. So I switch to seismics, throw on a greater concentrated blast and a couple of abilities, get off a tsunami, and then death swiftness again. And so for that second part, when you need a lot of damage, once again, to skip a bunch of mechanics, I have a tsunami buff up while I'm ranging. And so every time I land a critical hit, I gain adrenaline. And when using a Reaver's Ring and a Grimoire, you get quite a few critical hits, especially because you're using Chinchampas. When you're using those Chinchampas, you're not getting the Hydrix Bolt specs for that portion, but
right.
You are getting a ton of crits because your Chinchampas are hitting 5 targets at once. Darkbow does 2 hit splats, so you have 10 chances to land a critical hit. And oftentimes you'll land a bunch of critical hits, you'll get the tsunami damage buff for all of them, and then you'll just be able to dark bow over and over and over and over again. Which is pretty fun.
And you know, just to clarify here, this is to bring ranged up. It's not gonna outdo Fortick magic with Fracture Staff. We need to be 100% clear about that, right?
Yeah, it is important though, because having a Chinner for AOD is really, really good. And with both the Last Gods, you can get pretty competitive but you can't use that bow when you're doing the most important part of your job, which is killing the minions fast, because you have Chinchampas equipped. And so without using Tsunami prior to it, you get far fewer dark bows, maybe 2 to 3 dark bows, and now you get doubled.
And that's a substantial difference in the amount of damage. I see.
And yeah, it's a huge difference. And it actually is vital, because in a 5-man, if you're not doing this, you don't kill, like the FSOAers, if they're good, will phase the boss way too fast and the minions will still be alive for the pillars phase. And so it delays the kill a lot. Assuming the 4 people you're with are really good, you'll end up delaying the kill a lot. And so the first couple times I didn't do the rotation quite right, and I delayed our kills a bit. But once I got it down, kill times were pretty good. And it's good. It's pretty easy to do once you figure it out. And it's pretty good money. It's probably, I don't know, 120, 130 mil GP an hour.
Yeah, AOD has always been something that shined through. I got the setup image on screen right now for anybody watching on YouTube here. Is there anything in particular here that you wanna highlight through this here?
Well,
I mean, I see the what bow is that? That's the Annihilation, or what is that?
Decimation. Yeah. Right. So that should be a bow of the Last Gods, but I haven't done Zamorak yet on my Iron Man, because I want to FSOA for my Zamorak grind, and I'm almost 1,000 kills at hard mode Carapac with only one weapon piece, so it's a little sad.
That's disheartening.
Yeah, you know, I'll get it eventually, I'm sure. Maybe I'll get it back-to-back one day, who knows. Yeah, I mean, everything else, I mean, I have, some stuff is weird, like I have an Armadale Buckler. Your shield is totally irrelevant. You basically never equip it at AOD, but I just have one just in case I need it for some reason if the kill goes terribly. I have an Armadale Buckler simply because I don't have a better shield, because I've not gotten a single shield at Rise of the Six in like 600 kills, which is also kind of funny. And then you don't need a Sun Spear. I have that because I haven't done Zamorak yet, so I don't have greater death swiftness yet. I don't know. Not everything else.
Yeah, everything else is pretty
normal.
Fairly explanatory there. And I think this is interesting to talk about because we come back from the discussion about four tick auto attacking and this, or you know, just camping the dual wields and then swapping to the fractured staff as, you know, being in effect the gateway to this. But at the end of the day here, we're looking at something upwards of 10 to 12 swaps involved, and this is for a, you know, a highly specific ranged rotation at AOD. And it's possible in game. And things like this underscore, I think, why Switchscape could never be removed. They could never just pull the plug on this, right?
Yeah. And also the decimation bow there is for incendiary shot. That's why I bring it.
Okay.
Even though I don't have the bow of the last gods. And the EOFs are Theron Godbow, Eldritch Crossbow, and Darkbow.
Which are so, you know, the Trinity for ranged. So
Yes. Yeah. And this grave used to be like 16 million GP. It's so nice that it's not.
Right, I was going to ask about that given the recent changes.
It's not
here.
Bad. It's like 2.5 mil or something. It's not a big deal. But yeah, there was a time when this grave would bankrupt you if you made too many mistakes in an hour.
Yeah, I could imagine. Where else could you take a setup like this to?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that definitely an example, if you wanted to use ranged at Virago, you can utilize. So it's there are a lot of phase transitions where at the end of the phase, you can stick a dummy down and use a tsunami prior to the next phase starting. And then you'll have your tsunami buff up for when you're using your death swiftness rotation on the next phase. So for example, at the end of phase two, a common thing you could do is drop a dummy down, get off a natural instinct into a tsunami. And then as soon as the next phase starts, you'll have your tsunami buff active for phase three. So there are probably a couple places where you could use this, but basically if there are phase transitions that are either really long, like Virago, or are relatively short, but the boss is attackable, but not damageable, like AOD, there's really no reason to not bring a wand and orb to get off a tsunami, because you only need five stacks. Greater concentrated blast gets you three stacks basically instantly. So in exchange for four abilities, you get a tsunami buff on your next rotation, which is obviously hugely impactful because it just pumps you full of so much extra adrenaline.
And my question then to end all this off, and, you know, Tanis, you can jump in if you have any questions as well on this, is do you think that this is healthy for the game?
It's a good question. I mean, for me, I've initially, when my friends told me that this was my job, I was pretty irritated. I was like, there's no way you're making me do this. This is ridiculous. But then after a couple of kills, I found it to be actually really, really easy, and also super fun, because it is really satisfying to just hit my dark bow button 7 or 8 times in a row and just see the crits just stacking up. And it's just, I don't know, it's a good time, because, you know, if you do 7 dark bow specs, each one of those probably is hitting about 25,000 damage. It's pretty fun to get almost 200,000 damage in what feels like a couple of seconds.
I can only imagine. And you know, with that, I just really have to wonder where we go, because I think from this it's clear that Switchscape can't be touched. So
There's some ways that I think it could be improved a lot. Melee is really struggling right now, because in order to do anything close to range with Bow of the Last Gods or Mage with FSOA, you need to bring a ton of weapons. And something as simple as, for example, the Masterwork Spear buff being something akin to a relic power, where you can have it just be a permanent effect that would reduce a weapon. The fact that the Abyssal Scourge and the main hand the main hand cold cut have to be swapped out is frustrating. I don't know. I mean, I think melee
and
is,
specifically melee is the Masterwork Spear for its increased bleed duration, and then the fact that the Scourge has what you want on it, the Parasite bleed, mm-hmm. when the cold cut does not.
Yeah, I think melee is extremely in a tough spot because, like, the thing I'm doing with ranged AOD is mostly just for fun. I would be, if I had a bow of the Last Gods, I'd probably be fine with just that and an SGB and Elder's Crossbow. But with melee, you have to bring like 10 or 11 items to do anything even close to magic, which really just requires
four. And you know, we discussed this the week before, I believe, Tanis, about you know, we want to be able to use melee because, you know, we got the whip, we got the wonderful Sarah Doman rune armor and all that. But at, you know, high-end PVM, it's just not what the meta is on that. So, I mean, you can be successful, but you're not going to be doing nearly as well as we've talked about with magic and now as we have talked about with ranged here in the same episode. Tanis, yeah. you have anything on this before we move on?
Not really. And, I mean, amazingly, melee's not as far off for me because, once again, not at those high levels. So I'm running Masterwork, I'm running Whip with that, the helmet. The
Abyssal helmet, the Eraser helmet, yeah.
Yeah. I think I got spikes.
Well, yeah, it looks like a pink eraser.
No, yeah, you're right, yeah.
So.
Yeah, that helmet is also something like that. We should get a helmet stand or something that you could put it on. I mean, I just think Switchscape is here to stay, but it doesn't have to be this bad. It could. There are things they can do to fix it. I mean, this they could eliminate entirely by just making Tsunami only buff magical critical hits, and then this is deleted.
Right, but could you even do that? Because then you'd have people in the same camp where you are start talking about this, that this was taken away.
That's a good question. I've always thought that this game's PVM meta was one that rewarded effort and creativity. And I think that's what makes the combat system really, really fun at the high end. And it's not like any of this is necessary for AOD. Like, you can do 7-man AOD without any switches and probably get 3-minute to 3-minute and 30-second kills. I mean, we had none of this stuff when AOD came out. It wasn't like anyone was struggling. But to do 2-minute kills in a 5-man, it does require kind of pushing the envelope a bit more. And for me, I think that's fine.
Yeah, and that's what you do for fun. So
yeah. Yeah.
All right. Good. One final piece of RS news before we move on and wrap the show up for this week. There was a RuneScape Spring survey, but it is now closed. This was very much a case of blink and you will have missed it. Did either of you guys fill this out?
I had no idea that this was a thing.
Yeah, same.
when did this happen?
It was on the news post, and now the survey is closed.
Yeah, that's kind of quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
I expected it to be like
a week.
I figured it'd be in the email too.
Right, because didn't they put that in an email? You're right. You're right. We got an email about this last Friday, I think. Just looking at this here, thinking about it now. I'm trying to find that in my email as we go here. Probably not a good idea to be doing that as we run, but nonetheless, the survey measured engagement and interest in recent content like the Fort and the Quest and the Slayer update, just to name a few things around the edges. So there was that. They also asked if we were aware of upcoming future updates like Necromancy, like the max cash limit increase, like the upcoming Quest. They asked if we were aware of all those sorts of updates, where we got our RuneScape news and whatnot. Oops. So, I mean, yeah, like fairly self-explanatory. Are you aware that, you know, we put this update into game? How do you feel about it? Are you aware these updates are coming? Are you excited for them? That sort of thing. And then general questions of, you know, how do you feel about RS today? Would you recommend RS to a friend? That sort of thing. Then we got to the question that, you know, really, you know, raised everybody's eyebrows. It was a question of, you know, what else could we sell for the price of bonds in our store? And there was a definite weird one in there, and it was written in such a way that it was seeming like they were saying they were going to be either selling Iron Man status or selling the ability to de-Iron Man your account. And of course, selling Iron Man status to the point where somebody who already has an account and then allowing them to convert it into an Iron Man, I think that's just plain dumb, because if you're going to be an Iron Man, you start out at the ground floor like everyone else. And then, charging people.
This must have just been a mistake.
Yeah.
Like, they must have just worded the question wrong, because there's no way they could
do that. No. And then even, you know, selling the ability to de-iron your account, that's something you can already do in Edgerail, so there's no point in charging for that. That doesn't make sense. And, you know,
I'd imagine they just removed that.
Yeah, yeah.
So they would just remove it and make it a paid service.
But the interesting part is that it was later clarified that neither of these options were on the board. They just threw them out there as potential survey options. So they threw these options out there that were kind of dumb, when in reality, you know, none of them were on the board. So that's a bit weird. Then there was a question, what would you buy for bonds? And, you know, I had an immediate answer to this one on at least two of the three options. And I don't know, what would you guys buy for bonds? I'll let you guys go first, and I'll tell you what my options were.
I think, okay, how about an experience scroll double XP for an hour, or however many hours? Like, I don't know what the hours are, right? I'm not sure what that balance is.
Yeah, kind of like the knowledge bomb thing, right?
Yeah. Or maybe just be able to buy knowledge bombs themselves. Because plus 50% is still pretty good, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one, Tanis. I like that. I like that.
And I like it too.
And that's kind of on the same vein as what I put. I put bonus XP star packages, lamp packages, and cosmetics, because, I mean, let's just be 100% real at this point, right? You buy a bond with your GP in game, you can convert that to rune coins, or you can convert that to treasure hunter keys if you want to. So why don't we just, you know, stop dodging the topic nobody likes to talk about and admit that it's time to have somewhere on the store where you can have direct purchase, whether that's, you know, direct purchase with bonds or direct purchase with oddments like we have, and, you know, maybe even just have a way to let people direct purchase oddments so they can get those stars and lamps each day when they want them, sort of thing. And it just goes to a level of confusion where I think rather than selling bonds, they should just be selling rune coins, and then you can use those rune coins for whatever you want. You could use them for lamps, you could use them for membership, you could use them for cosmetics, so on and so forth. It's just something that needs to happen at some point, where there needs to be a premium currency unification. Like, we don't need oddments, we don't need rune coins, and we don't need bonds. Just bring them all into one roof that you can purchase. You know, you can give $20 and you get a certain amount of rune coins, and then that can go for any of those things.
Yeah, now I'm all for the universal kind of currency, I guess, and, you know, in theory, we talked about it before. The thing with bonds, though, is you can never under count what it did to try to stop
trading.
Like, farm.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. And I mean, with that, maybe you just unify everything under bonds then, right?
Yeah, something, I don't know. I feel like they're different because they play a role in the RuneScape economy and the real economy. It's a different animal.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe you just need to have an option then that you allow people to purchase oddments with bonds as well, and then you got, you know, rune coins versus oddments, and then rune coins goes towards your cosmetics, oddments goes towards your XP and lamps, and then bonds goes towards your membership and your GP that you want to buy and that sort of thing.
Hey, Goldfink, right?
Yeah, Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So I don't know. And I mean, we'll have to wait and see if the survey comes back, but it was a very, very narrow window. It was almost designed to be picked up solely by the people who read the news post each and every day, because that's who you would be targeting in a survey like this if you had it only open, you know, for 48 hours or so for the people who initially just go read the RS News post and then, you know, see the survey and think, ah, there we go. There we go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's gone. And you, as far as I know, you can't complete that from where we're at right now, as though, even though that more input from the community is always a good thing on this. So we'll have to wait and see if anything like this comes back in the future.
I would say for me, definitely, it would be cosmetic ability overrides.
Yeah, that's another one.
They've done a pretty good job with those. It's really unfortunate that the dragon breath one is like 3-4 bill or something.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's just like zombie walk or anything else. When something is hard to get on Treasure Hunter and then there's no other way to get it in the game, it becomes many bills.
Right, the Azure Dragon Breath. Of course, that's like that because it's blue and, you know, that's another common fire ability like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and it looks good.
It certainly does. And, you know, I thought the Azure Death Swiftness that came out a couple of weeks back also looked good.
Yeah, and I think that's also like many billions of GP.
Yeah, and it's a question of, you know, do you want to limit these strictly to Treasure Hunter, or should there be a way to just direct purchase them? And we need to, of course, come in with the realization that anytime you allow direct purchasing of something that is gamble, either through a gamble box or something like Treasure Hunter, it's going to be more expensive. Everybody just needs to know that. But there should be an opportunity to be able to purchase them at some point, at least. So.
Yeah, I think I've been a big fan of, I think they're my favorite cosmetics ability overrides. So I think that would be something that.
And I mean, we said that years ago that with the right marketing, cosmetics could be a huge cash sink for, or cash source for Jagex. And lo and behold, here we are, 3-4 bill for that.
Yeah. Yeah, just add an NPC to the game who sells ability overrides for max cash. Be a great gold sink.
Ooh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Anything else before we move on to our achievables of the week? Going once, going twice, gone. All right. David, you want to start us off then?
Yeah, Arcane got 120 fishing on May 3rd, 2023. Such XP waste with 120 archaeology on the 3rd. Worst Tasker got both 99 defense and 99 constitution on May 3rd. Jade Gizmo got 120 archaeology on the 2nd. Rippeth got 120 invention on the 2nd. Naranja got 99 farming, 99 slayer, and 99 invention on May 1st. And Worst Tasker, again, got 99 ranged on May 1st.
All right, then moving on to April 30th, we had Naranja with 99 archaeology, attack, ranged, and strength. So nice job there. And then we had one of a few with 99 farming, smithing, and fishing. So way to go.
Then continuing on, we have Pentixide with 99 cooking on the 30th. Queen RuPaul with 99 agility on the 30th. Sirion got 120 archaeology on the 29th. Mahin got 99 runecrafting on the 28th. Naranja again with 99 summoning on the 28th. And then Pentixide with 99 magic and 99 fire making also on the 28th. Well done, everyone. Nice achievements. All right, so I've been kind of on a tech news angle here for pick of the week, and I got another one of these this week for you guys. What if I told you that going forward, at some point in the future, you'd be able to log into your Google account without a password?
I would say, how secure is that?
And I would say very secure. So, with this week, Google has announced that going forward, you'll be able to create passkeys to log in to your own Google account. And when you do this, you won't need to use two-factor authentication anymore. And you might not have heard of this before, but what a passkey is it's a way to log in to a specific website without using a password. They're supported by many major services already, web browsers, Chrome, Safari, and whatnot, Apple's keychain, password managers like 1Password are bringing support in very soon. And with this, they simply allow somebody to log into a service by unlocking their computer, their mobile device with their PIN number, computer password, or biometrics device that you have on your smartphone. And they're important because when you look at passwords, everybody has, of course, their one log password that they should be using for their password manager. But when it comes down to actually managing your passwords, if you don't use a password manager, having good, strong, unique passwords for every service is a real pain. So the idea is that the sooner we can get away from passwords, the better. And what this does is it uses industry standard encryption technology to in effect create what's called a public and private key pair that authenticates you to your account. So the way it works is that your private key is stored on your device and encrypted, and then you upload your public key to the service that's providing the passcode, or the passkey rather. And with that, your device will create the authentication process, and with that, do a handshake, and then, in effect, tell the service if you're to be authenticated or not. And the whole idea behind this is that you don't need to worry about passwords being phished. You don't need to worry about passwords being stolen, because the passkeys themselves are stored on your computer or your mobile device, and it all depends on your software biometrics on your smartphone or your computer PIN or password. And with that, these passkeys are also encrypted in such a way that they only stay on your device. You can't have them written down in books sitting beside your computer so they can't be stolen and that sort of thing going forward. And in essence, what it does is it brings a level of security that a lot of people have had on things like server logins, Linux server logins and the like, and very secure enterprise hardware systems to the everyday user. And the hope is with this, that with Google adopting it for the Google account, and then vendors like Apple supporting it and the password manager supporting it, is that this will be enough of a kick over time to allow more and more services out there to support passkeys over passwords. And that's why this is the pick of the week this week, because Google supporting this out the gate sends a huge message out there to the entire community that, okay, well, Google is 100% behind this and going forward with this, maybe it might not be such a bad idea if my service or application can support these passkeys going forward on this. So this could be, you know, down the road, a very big day for user security on our personal computers and personal devices that we've been waiting a long time for. And it's made all the much better by the fact that Apple already supports it on the iOS ecosystem, the Mac ecosystem, and all the Android smartphones with modern Android OSs also support this. So it's really only a matter of time if companies decide to start adopting this. Do either of you guys have any questions on this? Or require...
This sounds really great.
Require clarification on this? Yeah, it is. It is. And, you know, the number one thing I go to with this is that if RuneScape could, you know, move to this sort of system, which, I mean, the RuneScape audience is one that I don't think necessarily is going to want to do this. I've already had enough of difficulty convincing people that moving to the Jagex launcher is a good thing combined with Jagex accounts. I don't think getting them to move to passkeys would be a thing that would be in their future that soon either. But you know, we take what we can get on this.
I mean, I think two-factor is starting to get annoying because It's become so prevalent.
And this solves that.
Yeah, I mean, as long as I take it someone can't get into your computer and get your half of the passkey.
No, because on smartphones, and if you store your passkeys in a password manager like 1Password, they are encrypted.
Okay.
Yeah. And even if they do get them, you would still need that device, in effect, code to unlock it. So it's baked into the security of that device.
Okay.
Like the way Google says that it goes, and I'm not going to read too much into this because I don't want to put everyone to sleep, but they said the main ingredient of a passkey is the cryptographic private key, which is stored on your device. So when you create one, the corresponding public key will be then uploaded to Google. So when you sign in, they ask your device to sign a unique challenge with that private key. And then if that private key signs correctly, then you are granted access. And to get it to sign correctly, you will need to unlock that device or your password manager if you're using that to manage it.
Oh, okay. I feel like this has been... This started like a while back, right?
Yeah. This is public-private key authentication. And anybody who has worked with, you know, like a Linux server or Linux, you know, desktop even, who wants to not use a password, can set something like this up.
I was going to say, like, I remember something like this when I was streaming. Like, there was a lot of, like, little niche programs and stuff that had these keys that you would have kind of generated on your end, and then you would type
it in. Public-private key. This is the same sort of thing, except taken up to a level to verify an identity, rather than just to give you access to something like the Twitch API.
Okay.
Yeah. At the high level, it's the same general idea, but it's a little bit different implementation behind the scenes.
Okay. That's cool.
And I mean, they're not spoofable. They can't be stolen, that sort of thing. So it's just better all throughout the way. And I'll probably, you know, move my Google account to a passkey once my password manager, 1Password, supports that. 1Password says they'll be supporting that in June. So I'll, you know, report back on that when that happens. So, and you know, just this is also your just daily reminder that if you're not already using it, use a password manager. At the very least, if you are in the Mac ecosystem, use the iCloud keychain. And, you know, failing that, just use, I'd say at this point, maybe the Google password manager, because I think they have one too. I need to look into that for folks who are not in the Apple ecosystem. But in any case, that's the pick of the week, and hopefully we can start to move away from worrying about stolen passwords. What's yours, Tanis?
So this week, because we are recording on May the 4th, that's right, Star Wars Day, I have a Star Wars pick. So an older game now, but actually it's, you know, I was thinking about it, it's probably about the same time as Stowe came out, probably about around the same age. But fans of Star Wars The Old Republic, I wanted to bring you a accessibility guide that I found this week. This has always been a game I wanted to play, but never could figure out a way to make it more accessible. That was always a major challenge with this, and I found this the other day by a pretty well-known The Old Republic YouTuber. Does a lot of those videos and stuff. So they made an accessibility guide for the best settings in the game, and it's I find it helpful. Someday I look to really get into it, but you know how it is. I mean, how many MMOs can you juggle at the same time? But,
yeah.
You know,
and based on this, they're not, you know, they're not Sony with the one we talked about a few weeks back, or even the narrated menus from ESO. Because looking into these guides, they're quite extensive into the customization that you have to do for getting them to work.
Yeah, it's pretty intense, you know, like, which is, you know, that's always made that always made Stowe stand out because it was really good.
Really?
From just like day one. I mean, for me at that time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, it was pretty good. Because it had, you got to think, like, it had scalable interface, like,
yeah.
A long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the people who get the most use out of scalable interfaces now are the people who have the 4K screens that need to make it bigger.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that funny? But, yeah, just in case someone can benefit from this, I wanted a Star Wars pick, and, you know, I thought this would be great. The reason I wanted to play it, man, is there's lore in the game that it doesn't exist anywhere else.
Right. And rather than just reading through all the lore, why not experience it yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it's all voice acted. This game has a really unique pay model where you can be a completely free to play player, or you can pay like a one time type of fee and have like an intermediate level, or you can pay like a monthly subscription and be like at a high tier level. I think it's different than a lot of other games, like, because of that, you know, being at that mid-tier, basically.
Right, yeah. All right, sounds good. And, you know, we always love talking about accessibility here, so anytime we can, you know, even just dive into a little bit of, you know, making it easier on one game or another, it's good to do those as picks of the week. So, David, what you been up to in RS?
So, I'm on my main, mostly just skilling. I got 200 mil thieving pretty recently, and now I'm working on mining and hunter.
Nice.
Almost 120 hunter. Still working on 5.6 bill XP, past 4 bill a little while ago. And then on my Iron Man, I'm working on a completionist cape. So tons of dungeoneering lately.
Oh my god, that must be difficult.
I like it. I mean, they brought group dungeoneering for Iron Man into the game, so it's actually been pretty fun to learn the new Dungeoneering meta, which involves everyone on the team buying those wild cards from the Elite Reward Shop. And, you know, you get between 500 and 600 KXP per warped floor. And if you're on a good team, warped floors take 6-7 minutes. So it's really, really fast XP per an hour. It's not my favorite thing to do, but it feels a lot less terrible than it did when it was solo only. So yeah, just working on completion escape. So mostly questing and dungeoneering with some occasional AOD thrown in there as well.
With 10 to 12 switches in there.
Yeah. So it's a good time.
All right. How about you, Tanis?
Just a little bit of Slayer. Still working on trying to get the last trophy. And from the Raptor, and that's been about it.
All right, fair enough. I'm still slogging through this Yak track. I don't know if I'm going to make it. I'm on task 57.
Have you used your skips yet?
I have been using them. I have two left.
Oh, I mean, you'll get through it. It's
my current one is fire making, and I need to underscore how idiotic these higher level fire making tasks are, in that they have to be either driftwood or elder logs.
We'll just do the skill and chill. I did skill and chill for all of my tasks.
Yeah, I guess you know, you just go AFK somewhere and do that for a few hours, and that'd be a way to get through.
Yeah,
it,
I completed my Yak track yesterday, and I have not actually done a single task.
Oh, so you did skill and kill throughout the entire thing then? Interesting.
Yeah, and then when I had the same number of tasks left that I had skips, I just skipped all of them.
All right.
Because those are the skill and kills that require the most hours.
And I guess I should come back to you, Tanis. How is your Yak track going? Because you play it with skill and kill.
Yeah, I think we should have a talk about this when it's all over. Because there's no way I'll finish it. And
that seems like that was the goal, right? Make people purchase more skips.
Yeah, I don't. Well, you know, I don't like that. I don't like it that
maybe
much.
Maybe I just play the game way too much, which is why I finished yesterday. I don't know. I didn't buy any skips or anything either. I just used the ones that they give you.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not playing as much as I would have, but I'm also on a normal yak track. I would have been, you know, I would have been fairly close.
Yeah.
It's just so far
out. Well, yeah, I remember we averaged it out and it was supposed to be about 3 hours a day.
Yeah.
For this one?
Yeah. If you did this, yeah,
I probably, average way more than 3 hours a day. So,
well, there you go.
I see when I'm done.
But you know,
it's all AFK. I like pickpocket crooks of qualities
right.
for 4 hours, or like do 4 hours of mining or something. I'm not really playing. It feels
fair.
Like.
Fair. Yeah. I mean, you can do that on the side. And you know, I feel like my favorite tasks this time around have been archaeology and mining, if I'm being honest. So, I don't know. Take that for what it's worth, but I'm going to see if I can get there by the end, because I feel like if you do the task A's, you can. Otherwise, I don't know. I don't know if there's enough time for me to get through the rest of it in the about 8 or so days left by the time most people will be hearing this. But yeah, Tanis, we should have a talk about Yak Track once this is all said and done, I think. Let's remember to do that. Let's remember to do that. See how it shook down for everyone. But aside from that, you know, in dailies and dusted off the PVM gear for the beta server. So that's going to be this weekend, just going around to just see exactly what we have going on with everything there. But nonetheless, that pretty much wraps this episode of Update. We'll be back next week for the next one. If you want to get it delivered automatically to you, the best way to do that is to subscribe. And with that, of course, we're on Apple Podcasts, Google, Pocket Cast, Spotify, and more. Just visit update.show/subscribe. And we're also on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. There we post the video versions of the podcast in addition to the nibbles, little clip segments of some of the key highlights of the show as we do the show each and every week. But if you like the show, or you know, you just want to support us, give us a like and subscribe on YouTube. It greatly helps the channel out. But with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. David, thanks for being here as usual. Good to have you back on the show.
Yeah, I had a good time. Thanks.
Yep. And of course, Tanis and I will be back next week. See you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.